We're right back into our description of Solomon's temple today. And I want you to open to 1 Kings chapter 7. We're going to roll it back and start at verse 27 here in a moment. Keep in mind that we've got the parallel from over in 2 Chronicles chapter 4 for this information as well. There's just tons of stuff here, and it is easy to get a little bit confused or sidetracked or anything like that. And so I hope you'll just kind of bear with me as we try to get this thing done. Solomon is building the building that his father David designed at the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. We don't have floor plans. We don't have elevation prints. We only have the words describing the key aspects of most of the temple complex. We don't have all the fine-tuning things, the things that Hiram did in great detail. So we have to kind of imagine filling in some gaps here and there. I've been trying to do that a little bit as we go. The most recent thing we talked about was the great big gigantic water tank that's out in front of the temple. It is a bronze hemisphere, a big bowl, if you will, that is sitting on the backs, the hindquarters, of 12 what I believe are probably full-scale bronze bulls that represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And three of them are facing north, three are south, three east, three west. I don't know how they access the water inside of this giant tank. My suspicion is there was some sort of piping system where they can turn spigots on, or maybe the spigots ran on a regular basis because they were there for the priests to wash as they went through their duty all day long. That's a detail from 2 Chronicles 4:6. In addition to the giant water tank, there were 10 other water tanks, 5 to the north of the temple building, 5 to the south of the temple building, that were used in washing the butchered animals that were being used in the sacrificial system. So let's jump back in on the description of those. Verse 27 of 1 Kings 7, he also made the 10 stands of bronze. This is what these smaller tanks sat upon. Each stand was 4 cubits long and 4 cubits high, which we're using the long cubits, so that's almost 7 feet. And then it was 3 cubits high, which is a little over 5 feet. So it's not like a little bitty barbecue sort of stand that you're rolling around. This is a big rolling water tank. And it's decorated. It's decorated very well by Hiram, the half Israeli, half Phoenician guy that's doing all the fine details on these things. This was the construction of the stands. They had panels. The panels were set in the frames. On the panels, there were set in the frames were lions, oxen, and gerubim. Remember the four-faced, four-winged angelic beings. On the frames, both above and below the lions and the oxen, there were wreaths of beveled work. So these were works of art, not just simply utilitarian stands for water tanks. Moreover, each stand had 4 bronze wheels and axles of bronze, and at the 4 corners were supports for a basin. The supports were cast with wreaths at the side of each. Its opening was within a crown that projected upward 1 cubit, and its opening was round as the pedestal is made, 1.5 cubits deep. As its openings, there were carvings, and its panels were square, not round. So basically, the place where the water tank fit into the top of this stand, that's what was just described. It's very ornate. The four wheels, because these move, the four wheels were underneath the panels. So they're recessed. The axles of the wheels were of one piece with the stands. So the wheels rotated on stationary integrated axles, probably greased or bearinged in order to help them move. The height of a wheel was a cubit and a half, so basically 2.5 feet tall. Think of maybe like a chariot wheel size. Obviously, it did not have a tube or rubber. We're talking about probably just bronze wheels, like a chariot. The wheels were made like a chariot wheel. Their axles, their rims, their spokes, and their hubs were all cast. There were four supports at the four corners of each stand. The supports were one piece with the stands. And on the top of the stand, there was a round band half a cubit high, and on the top of the stand it stays, and its panels were of one piece with it. And on the surface of its stays and on its panels, he carved cherubim, lions, palm trees, according to the space of each, with wreaths all around. So this is really matching up what we talked about on the inside of the temple. All this manner he made, or after this manner, he made the 10 stands, all of them cast alike, of the same measure, the same form. So they were identical. He made 10 basins of bronze. So these are the water tanks. Don't think of some oversized metal pan that you might cook in or put a big gigantic salad in. These are bigger than that. Each basin held 40 baths. Now, we don't know the exact volume of a bath from this time period. You'll see ranges in the material. I picked a mid-range number just to make it easier to do calculations. I picked 6 gallons to a bath. So 40 baths equals 240 gallons of water. That's like what you'd find in a hot tub. It's about a ton of water. Each basin measured 4 cubits. You know, 4 cubits by the long cubit, almost 7 feet. And there was a basin for each of the 10 stands. And he set the stands 5 on the south side of the house and 5 on the north side of the house. That's because we have a bunch of priests working every single day in this temple. And they're overlapping as they go up to the sacrificial altar. And there's a lot of butchering going along on both sides of the front section of the temple. And so you got to have a lot of butchering stations and a lot of water needed at those butchering stations. So that's what the pragmatic use of these things are. And then he set that sea. It's called a sea because there's just so much water in it. The big water tank on the back of all of these full-sized bronze bulls at the southeast corner of the house. The altar for sacrifice is directly in front of the house. So the big water tank is south from there. Now, a little bit more detail comes from 2 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 7 at this point. Remember, we're talking about Hiram, who is the manufacturer of all of this material. He's overseeing the fine details of, particularly the bronze is what we're talking about right now. But now we read that he did some work for inside the holy area. Verse 7 of 2 Chronicles 4, he made 10 golden lampstands as prescribed. Now, we already had the 7-branched lampstand from way back in the time of Moses. It was made from 75 pounds, I think. I could be wrong about that, but that's what's in the back of my mind, of gold. And it was a stylized almond tree with seven branches that terminated with seven open almond buds. And seven golden lamps were placed inside of those almond buds. That was the menorah that was in the tabernacle. It's still around. I'm going to suggest to you later what I think happens with it. These are provided in the new temple because one little lamp is, even with seven lamps on it, one little lampstand is not going to cut it in this much larger space. So at the direction of the Holy Spirit, through David, now into Solomon, who gives the job over to Hiram, they make 10 golden lampstands. Now, were they seven branched? We don't know. Maybe. But there's at least 10 additional light sources inside this new worship space that's about 40 cubits long, and so that's 69 feet. And so he puts five of these lampstands on the south side and five on the north side. Now, it's 20 cubits across. That's 34 and a half feet. So if he spaces them equally, then there's definitely going to be plenty of light in that area. But he's not done. He also made 10 tables, presumably of gold here, and placed them in the temple, five on the south side, five on the north, probably in association with the lampstands that we just saw go in place. There was one table of the bread of the presence that was made for the original tabernacle. But we've now got a lot more priests on duty at the same time. And so they need lots more bread of the presence. Now, does that mean that each of these 10 new tables has 12 of the loaves of bread, the flat loaves of bread, on them? Do they have the incense and the cups of drink offerings on them? I would guess so. And at the end of each week, changing over to the beginning of the new week, the bread of the presence on all these tables will be eaten by the priests that are going off duty and the priests that are going on duty as part of that ceremony. And so that's what he's designing here, is making room for lots more priests on duty at the same time. He also made 100 basins of gold. The basins here, probably smaller dishes that are used to move things like incense and hot coals and grain offerings and things like that around the temple complex. And so anything that's related to the interior of the temple tends to be made of gold. And then verse number 9, he made the court of the priests and the great court and the doors for the court and overlaid their doors with bronze. We talked recently about how there was a perimeter wall around this temple, just like there was a perimeter fabric fence around the tabernacle. And we know that this perimeter wall was three courses of stone tall with a wood topper to it, which I suggested to you indicated porticos all around on the inside of this perimeter wall. Well, here it's mentioned again. The court of the priests would be the area around the altar of sacrifice, And around all the places where the big water tanks, the portable water tanks are, where they're having their sacrificial butchering zones, that's the court of priests. The great court is going to be in front of that, meaning to the east, where the worshipers come in and gather for meeting with the priests and participating in the worship of God. And then the doors of the court is a reference to the front gate, which was on the east side. Some wonder whether or not there were more gates, like on the north and the south side of this forecourt, this great court. Maybe, because we know that later manifestations of the temple design has that. But certainly there was the east gate, because it gets mentioned in some passages. And so Hiram also made the great big bronze doors for this gate. And then we have the reminder here that he set the sea at the southeast corner of the house. We already knew about that. Since we're in 2 Chronicles, let's just go on with this catch-all passage. Hiram also made the pots, the shovels, the basins. So all of the accoutrements that are needed to do worship. So Hiram finished the work that he did for King Solomon on the house of God. And then we have a catalog of his great works. The two pillars, that's the bronze pillars, Yakin and Boaz. The bowls, the two capitals on the top of the pillars. The two lattice works to cover the two bowls of the capitals that were on the top of the pillars. That's the netting that I think was anti-bird netting on the top of those capitals. The 400 pomegranates for the two lattice works. Two rows of pomegranates for each lattice work to cover the two bowls of the capitals that were on the pillars. He made the stands also, and the basins of the stands, and the one sea, and the 12 oxen underneath it. The pots, the shovels, the forks, all the equipment for these. Huram Abi, that's his more Phoenician-sounding name probably. Made of burnished bronze for King Solomon for the house of He Who Is. In the plain of the Jordan, the king cast them. Now, Solomon's not the one that's physically doing this work. It is Hiram on his behalf. King Solomon is paying for all this and directing all of it, so it's saying that he's doing it. Now, it's not being done near Jerusalem. It's being done 50, 60, 70 miles away, somewhere in the Jordan Valley, north of Sukkot, south of Zereda, because there's plenty of clay there, which they need for their molding process. Remember, they use what's called a lost wax molding process that I described as best I could in a previous episode. So they need all of this in order to build their kilns, in which they build their molds, and where they cast all of this bronze. And it's not just the big things. All the little things are cast there as well. Solomon made all these things in great quantities, for the weight of the bronze was not sought. That's an accounting representation that nobody knows how much bronze was used in the manufacture of all these things. They didn't keep a record. It was just too much. So Solomon made all the vessels that were in the house of God, the golden altar. We got another catalog of what was made. That's the one inside the holy zone, between the Holy of Holies and the holy place. It's the prayer altar, if you will. The tables for the bread of the presence. Notice the plural. The lampstands, again, notice the plural, and their lamps of pure gold to burn before the inner sanctuary as prescribed. The flowers, the lamps, the tongs, the purest gold, the snuffers, the basins, dishes for incense, and fire pans of pure gold, and the sockets of the temple, for the inner doors for the most holy place and for the doors of the nave of the temple were of gold. As I said, anything inside the holy place or the Holy of Holies, is made of gold. The things outside the building are made either of silver or bronze. And so all of this is done at the command of Solomon, using the divine design of David, but it's accomplished by Hiram. And thus, all the work that Solomon did for the house of He Who Is was finished. And Solomon brought in the things that David his father had dedicated and stored, the silver, the gold, and all the vessels in the treasuries of the house of God. So everything starts being put into place for the dedication ceremony. If it's not going to be immediately used, it's put in storage. Remember that we've got that wraparound storage annex that a lot of these additional bits and pieces will be kept until they are needed. Now, I want to talk about the dating of the building of the temple one more time, because I think I may have misread from the notes in front of me the proper dates. But let's go ahead and do this to prepare for what's coming up next in our story, and that's the dedication ceremony. You find it in 1 Kings chapter 8, 2 Chronicles chapter 5. We know that David must have died after 40 years of reign, shortly before Solomon began the building process. He laid the foundations for the temple on the second day of the second month of the 480th year of the Exodus, which was also his fourth year on the throne since his father put him there. You put all that together, and we understand that the building process started in the middle of April, 977 BC. The following fall, because of the way things work with the sabbatical cycle, was a sabbatical year, and then the following fall after that would have been a jubilee year, which means that for 2 years of the 7 years for the building process, there was no work being done on the Temple Mount. They couldn't, because they were having a mandatory rest. We are told that construction of the building itself, the complex, was finished in the 8th month of Solomon's 11th year. That is basically, let's see here, the 8th month was October going into November of 971. But you still need to get all of the bits and pieces needed to worship inside the building and outside in the courtyard. So for the next part of the year, everything is being finished until finally, as we're getting ready for the 7th month of Solomon's 12th year, we are ready to dedicate this brand new temple. And here is that story, at least the beginning of it, before we close up today. 1 Kings chapter 8. Then Solomon assembled the elders of Israel. That's probably a reference to the Sanhedrin, the 70. And all the heads of the tribes, each of the tribes had, shall we say, a president or a head that was in charge of it. And the leaders of the fathers' houses of the people of Israel, in their cultural system, the eldest person in a clan was kind of the one that called the shots in that clan. And so they were a leader in their own right. So that's probably who we're talking about there. So he called them all before King Solomon in Jerusalem. So this is a national assembly. Everybody has to show up to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is out of the city of David, which is Zion. Now, at this time, the city of David that we're referencing, the Mount Zion that we're referencing, is the little oval hill to the south of what we call the Temple Mount today. In fact, if you go to Israel, you go to the archaeological park to the south of the Temple Mount, and it is referred to as Ir David, the city of David. And that's where the Ark of the Covenant has been for the past 50 years. David brought it up once he took over Jerusalem in his eighth year, I think it was, and we're now in the 11th year of King Solomon. And so they're going to transport it just a few hundred yards to the north and install God's throne, because that's what the Ark of the Covenant is, into the new palace of He Who Is. Because the word temple is basically the word for palace. Verse 2, "And all the men of Israel assembled to King Solomon at the feast in the month of Ephanim, which is the seventh month." The feast that is in mind here is the feast known to the Israelis as Sukkot, known to us English speakers as the Feast of Booths or Feast of Tabernacles. It is an eight-day festival that celebrates being in the Promised Land and not still living in the wilderness in tents. And so what a perfect forum to use for the dedication of this brand new palace of God, the King of Israel.